Hello. Good afternoon. At least good afternoon here where I am, although we're in the midst of one of the torrential river bombs, whatever they're called, and getting inundated. I hope you're all in some area of the country where you're nice and warm and cozy. And then again, for those of you that are going to be listening to this delayed, it may be the middle of summer. So at any rate, we're going to talk about a few things today, and they're all going to be pretty much related. So this is our first time back on the air in quite a while, several months, as we were finishing up our book, which is now going off to the next stage, which is the, I forget what you call them, but the person who puts the formatting, the formatter. And so we're getting pretty close to getting the book out. And when we do, we'll let you know. We're more and more excited about it. When I was excited with the original idea, and then I got kind of, I don't know if I like this or not. But then as we were making our fourth round of corrections and rewriting things, I got very, very pleased with the book. So we'll let you know. And if any of you would like to help, we're going to have a launch team, it's called. And there are a variety of things that you can get for doing that. And that's to help us launch the book and reach out to more and more people. Kind of at the, on the lowest level of the launch team, you would get a free book. But then there are other things that we'll be looking at. So if you're interested, give Catherine, we'll send her an email is the best thing to do. And then she'll talk you through what that looks like. It's not much on your part, but you know, usually when people participate in an event that they feel is valuable and worthwhile, they feel more valuable and worthwhile. So hopefully you'll join us. So today's discussion is primarily going to be around menopause. Now, I know that's not going to appeal immediately to a lot of you. You 20-year-old women, not so much. You guys, not so much. But my experience is that most guys know women and that most women will go through menopause. So it's really an issue that is generally taken up much too late, that this is an issue that should be taken up for women in their 30s so that they can prevent having a difficult menopause, and for men to understand what their partners, significant others, et cetera, are going through and how to help them with that. So today I'm going to talk about menopause a bit. And I'm not going to go into tremendous depth on any of the particular subjects because I have quite a few things I want to cover. But I will say this. Menopause is a very dangerous time, right? We talk about the discomfort of menopause, you know, the hot flashes, the night sweats, the vaginal dryness, the low libido, et cetera. But what doesn't get talked about very much is the increased risk of death. Heart attacks go way up. Other problems go way up. And I'm going to talk today about some things that you can do and some ways that you can mitigate some of those issues. I'm going to pull this a little bit closer to me so I can see a little better. Okay, there we go. And so then, any of you watching, either live or Memorex, I would love to get your questions. I would love to start each of our programs with a short Q&A to answer any questions about prior shows. Also, you're welcome to send in questions of any type so that I can see what issues you're interested in and then maybe talk about those some more. So, without further ado, I'm going to start talking about menopause, and I'm going to share a presentation with you. Okay, so we kind of jumped ahead there, but we will, I'll get you back to the right place in just a moment here. Okay, so we're going to talk about menopause, and I love this picture, actually, because this is how a lot of my patients explain this, right? Okay. It's like, I am on fire. I can't stand this any longer. Can you help me? Now, I've had some times when this became almost epidemic proportions. Every few years, say over the last 20 years, there are three times that I can remember where there was a major study that was done. And in that study, there was some, it indicated some increased risk of cancer and heart disease from doing hormone replacement. And everybody would panic. All the doctors, the big HMOs, would suddenly cut women off of their hormone replacement, and the women were on fire. Now, if a woman does hormone replacement, which I'm not against, by the way, does hormone replacement and then stops, then menopause is actually more uncomfortable than if they had just naturally gone through menopause. So it's kind of an interesting dynamic. So we're going to take a look at the heat that gets built up here. But first, I want to talk a little bit. This picture is meant to represent the second spring, the beautiful, beautiful time when all women are incredibly happy. Now, in China, menopause is called the second spring. It is certainly not what it's called in the United States. And there are several reasons for that. One, menopause is not difficult in China. It's very mild, much milder than it is here in the United States. And that's true in many countries around the world, that menopause is much less painful and uncomfortable than it is here in the U.S. Part of that reason in China is that women retire younger, so they're not working at stressful jobs, which they should not be doing as they get older, because it takes more and more adrenal hormone release, which actually puts them in much greater danger. Also, generally in China, women have children a little younger, and fewer children, obviously. So their kids are out of the house by the time they hit menopause. Also, women in China are not exposed to quite as many external estrogen sources. And so here, as women go from the high estrogen of their menstruating years to their very low estrogen of menopause, it's like falling off a cliff. Well, in China, that cliff isn't as high. So it's not as frightening for women. Plus, they don't have the stresses of work, which is a huge, or stresses of anything really, which is a huge cause of menopausal symptoms. And then again, not having kids that are going to create more stress. So it's just a much, much easier transition. And my goal in working with my patient base is to work with them before they hit menopause, when they're in pre or perimenopause, and help prepare them for a much easier transition. And believe me, it can be much, much easier. Okay, so the second spring, and we're going to talk about a few of the issues that go along with menopause. Now, I'm going to focus on what happens in the US, which again is a little more dramatic. Okay, so y'all know, you know, you got the teeth get loose. I mean, this is really horrible. In Chinese medicine, men and women are on different cycles in terms of aging. Women are on, again, different cycles than men. And women are on 7-year cycles. So at each 7-year cycle, there's a difference, right? At 14, menstruation should start. At about 42, it should be very difficult to get pregnant. At 49, menopause should kick in, et cetera. And so these things are all actually considered quite normal, but they can be very uncomfortable for women. And some of these are totally unnecessary. Vaginal dryness, pretty much unnecessary. Incontinence, pretty much unnecessary. A loss of muscle tone, pretty much unnecessary. The changes in the breasts are going to happen. Hair on the head becomes thinner and loses its luster. The risk of cardiovascular disease goes up dramatically. Body and pubic hair becomes thicker and darker. Now, that's true for a few years, and then it becomes thinner and lighter until eventually some women will lose all or most of their pubic hair. And that's normal. That's not a disease of some kind. But again, the biggie is probably this loss of bone mass and increase in fragility in the bones. So here we have a nice hot flash coming on. And it's great when I'm interviewing my menopausal patients, they'll often have the courtesy to demonstrate this for me one or more times during our appointment. Looks pretty miserable. By the way, men can get hot flashes too. They just don't get them as generally as severely or as often, and they certainly don't talk about them. Okay. This is if you're going to look at it on your own. I'm not going to go through it a lot other than to point out that the pituitary, the gland in the center of your brain, gets its information from the hypothalamus, and then there are hormones released that activate the pituitary, which produces the anterior pituitary, the front part, produces a whole series of what are called trophic hormones. They're generally stimulating hormones, like follicle stimulating hormone, which causes the follicles or eggs to develop in the ovaries, and then luteinizing hormone, which causes them to be released from the ovaries. And here then we see that produces the corpus luteum, and out of the corpus luteum we get progesterone. So the point is, if there's no ovulation, which there generally isn't with menopause, there's a significant decrease in progesterone production, and that stimulates a lot of these negative, or what we consider negative manifestations of menopause. So one of the things I'm going to talk about a bit are catecholamines. Now, catecholamines are a grouping of neurotransmitters, and I'm not going to go into great depth on this because, you know, then we're getting into a lot of biochemistry and chemistry, but epinephrine, norepinephrine, and dopamine are catecholamines. Now, most of us are aware of cortisol and cortisol effects and somewhat familiar with epinephrine. It's the hormone that really causes your heart to race when you're under stress or you have to run away from the tiger. Then you get pumped up with epinephrine, which causes, again, the heart to speed up and pump harder and et cetera. Norepinephrine, which is a little bit less understood by the general public, causes the blood to be pulled from the center of the body and out to the hands and the brain so that you can run away from the tiger and be ready, you know, that split second ability to respond. And that's largely a norepinephrine function. Now, important to remember is that dopamine is the precursor to both epinephrine and norepinephrine. So if you have excess stress, which would activate epinephrine and norepinephrine release, it will then obviously deplete dopamine. Okay? High stress reduces dopamine levels. And dopamine is the a primary feel-good hormone. It what gives you a joy response. It increases motivation. It's why people play slot machines, because they'll get a little dopamine rush. It's why teenagers and some older people are constantly looking to get affirmations on their phone. Oh, they liked my picture. They liked my whatever. Each time that happens, you get a little tiny jolt of dopamine, and it makes you feel good and it makes you happy. It also increases motivation. So, for example, if I'm talking to someone and they say that they're depressed, I will ask them questions like, are you having negative self-talk? Or do you just not want to get off the couch? If they say, I just don't want to get off the couch, that is more likely to be a dopamine deficiency, okay? Because they're not motivated. What's the point? I'm not going to get any joy out of any of my activities anyway. I might as well just lay on the couch and watch TV. At least I get a little jolt of dopamine from watching these TV programs I like, okay? So it's a primary feel-good hormone. Excess stress, again, activating epinephrine and norepinephrine release will deplete dopamine. So excess stress and anxiety then lead to depression and a lack of motivation. And guess what happens? So those lead to a lack of motivation and depression, Well, then guess what happens there? That feeds back into the anxiety. So you get in this closed circuit of depression, anxiety, and the immediate cause of that or proximate cause of that is generally the anxiety from the overuse of epinephrine and norepinephrine. Now, I'm going to show a couple studies a little bit later that I didn't get put into the program here, but we will list them before we put this on the web about the dangers of this catecholamine excess problem. It leads to many, perhaps most, of the dangers and bad feelings that go along with menopause. Biomedical treatments, you can do hormone replacement, you can do oral, you can do implants, transdermal, topical. So oral, again, there have been three major studies that I remember implicating oral hormone replacement therapy with increases in cardiovascular risk and cancer risk. And the immediate knee-jerk reaction was to blame that on estrogen. Well, after looking and parsing through the actual research, many researchers changed their opinion and felt that the problem was synthetic progestins, okay? So you'll often hear a doctor say, well, we're going to give you estrogen and progesterone. Well, often that's not actually the case. If you look at the pill, and this is true with the pill, with birth control pills, they rarely give progesterone. They give estrogen and progestins, which are synthetic. And the reason they do that is because progesterone is a naturally occurring substance and it cannot be patented. So they need something that can be patented. So they use the progestins. And those seem to be, in many studies, where the majority of the problem arises. Now, I get asked the question very frequently, what about bioidentical hormones? So bioidentical hormones, you would usually get from a compounding pharmacy, and it would use the form of estrogen that human females have and produce, and it would use real progesterone. And there's very, very little increase in danger if one gets bioidentical, true bioidentical hormone replacement. And there are lots of benefits of that, which I'll get into. So that is a possibility. If my patients talk to me about that, I'll say, yeah, that's, you know, you're weighing a slight increase in risk versus a huge difference in your quality of life. So, but I'm firmly against using artificial oral hormone replacement. Now, you can also get implants, and these are done for birth control, but they are also can be done for hormone replacement postmenopausally. Now, most of the medical plans will not cover this, and you'd have to go to a functional medical doctor or a naturopath or someone that would do this for you. And there, the hormone pills or I don't know what you call them, actually. I'm going to call it a pill for now, is actually injected under your skin. And they're implanted, and they last for several months. And the advantage of those is that you get a very, very constant release of the hormones. So if you're doing an oral tablet, your level of hormones is going to go up and down over every 24 hours. And that's not quite as safe as if you're at a very constant level. Now, this is even more true and valid for men doing testosterone. Implanted is much safer than oral. So you could do an implant or you can do transdermal. Now, this is usually done with progesterone. And progesterone deficiency is very underrated as one of the significant causes of menopausal symptoms. We always look to the estrogen, and the estrogen is certainly significant, but sometimes transdermal or a lotion, basically a cream applied to the skin, transdermal, can get rid of most of the symptoms. and topical. I'm opposing to transdermal in that the topical is generally a vaginal cream, sometimes a suppository, that delivers a small dose of hormones directly to the tissue in the vagina. One of my all-time favorite drugs, because I can find almost no increased risk. There's a slight increased risk in women who have a history of breast cancer, but there doesn't seem to be any increased risk otherwise. Now, again, check it out for yourself, because there's new studies every day. But the difference in quality of life from doing topical vaginal estrogen is incredibly dramatic. I mean, it's very dramatic. I have several patients in their 60s who've come in, females, complaining that they have constant urinary tract infections, but when they're tested, they can't find any bugs. Typically, the problem is that over time, as the vaginal tissue, it starts to lose its plumpness, which it will with estrogen, and it shrinks and it gets friable or breaks easily. It's just really, you know, like having very, very dry skin on your hand or your arm. And then the urethra, the small tube that the urine goes through, doesn't have the same type of tissue. So it remains extending down below the level of the vaginal tissue. And since it's not supported at that point, it can get a little like a J hook in it. And then when a woman urinates, a little bit of urine will stay in that little J hook, and eventually it will burn like heck and it'll feel like a urinary tract infection. And doing a topical estrogen cream can completely or almost completely, I rarely say completely, right? Because there's always an exception, but I have never seen an exception. It can almost always relieve any risk associated with vaginal dryness. And then medical doctors, I think, are way too quick to give antidepressants and anti-anxiolytics. That's not the problem. The problem is the low hormones. So I think it's safer to treat the hormones directly than to give antidepressants and anti-anxiety drugs. TCM patterns, it's very interesting. In the original textbooks from China in the 60s, it was called kidney qi shu. Okay, so let me back up here a little bit. In the 60s, late 50s, Chairman Mao reactivated all the acupuncture, well, not all of them, reactivated acupuncture schools, and he assigned each of the major universities to write a new textbook. And so the question in China at that point was, okay, we're going to have traditional Chinese medicine, and we're using Western medicine because it has some really great possibilities. Now, how do we bring them together? Do we use traditional Chinese medicine as the center and bring Western medicine to it? Or do we use Western medicine as the center and bring traditional Chinese medicine to it? And this was a huge debate. Actually, people were killed over this debate, executed, because they came out on the wrong side. But it was eventually decided that TCM, traditional Chinese medicine, would use a core of Western medicine. And what I mean by that is textbooks were written that delineated illnesses as we would name them in the West: cardiovascular disease, urinary tract infection, etc. And then they would have Western treatments and traditional Chinese medicine treatments, acupuncture, nutrition, herbal treatments. Okay, so in those original textbooks, and the woman who wrote that textbook wrote the book, sent it in to be edited, and they said, hey, wait a minute, this is incomplete because you didn't put a section on menopause. And the woman who wrote the book said, well, I didn't put a section on menopause because you asked me to give diseases. And menopause obviously isn't a disease. All women who live long enough will go through menopause. It's a normal function of life. And they said, no, you have to put menopause in. So she did. And she called it kidney qi shu. So qi is the qi that we, you know, that gets talked of. And shu means deficiency. And it's very easy to get confused here. So if you ever go to a Chinese medical doctor and they talk about your kidney system, they're really not talking about your kidney system. Only a small amount of what we ascribe to the kidney is called the kidney in Chinese medicine. Most problems that you would have that would be associated with the kidney in the West are put in the category of the bladder channel in Chinese medicine. And if you look at kidney problems, for example, if you set out the symptoms of kidney yin deficiency and the symptoms, signs and symptoms of menopause, they agree at least 90%. So in the here in the West, when we're taught Chinese medicine, we're taught that menopause is a kidney yin deficiency, yin being the substance of the body, the fluids, the blood, etc., as opposed to the more substantial and energetic properties of the body. Now, actually, if we look at it, menopause has all the aspects of kidney deficiency of all kinds. It will embody kidney yin deficiency, kidney yang deficiency, kidney qi deficiency. For example, most kidney qi deficiency lists will include incontinence under that category. So that's a very common problem. Also, a couple of other kidney qi deficiencies, kidney yang deficiency, loss of libido, loss of warmth, loss of energy. So these are all things that will happen with menopause. So it's really an overall kidney deficiency. Later, it becomes complicated by what we call blood stasis. And that's really what leads to the heart disease, dementia, et cetera. It's that the blood stops moving freely. Now, there's a whole bunch of Western medical research coming out now, and researchers saying that the number one cause of disease and death is what they call sticky blood, which the Chinese call blood stasis. They are one and the same. Okay. So those are the more serious levels. Now, I'm going to give you some acupuncture formulas, and I'm going to talk even about some acupuncture points. Now, when I talk about the acupuncture points, these are things that you can look up. I'm not going to look them. I'm not going to put them all here. It would take me forever. But these are points that you can stimulate on yourself, either with acupressure using your hands, or you can use a tuning fork, or anything that will vibrate, a red light, infrared light, red light, anything that's going to stimulate the area, a cold laser on these points can help. Now, moxa, here, the last item listed, is burning a particular herbal formula that's made into a stick over those points. And that brings heat into the system. So this is particularly good for kidney yang deficiency, where there's a lot of cold. So I'm going to give you a couple of herb formulas for some specific conditions. And animal and insect products are always stronger than plant-based products when we get into herbs. Acupuncture. Qigong is really maybe the best for kidney deficiency. I did a form called Da Yen, which means wild goose. Qigong, you can find it all over the country, but it is great for menopause. It's also great for andropause for men. So wild goose qigong, great stuff. Okay, here's some basic formulas. Just so you can see how an acupuncturist, an herbalist might look at this. There's a very basic formula called Jurbai Di Huang Wan, and it's great. It's great for everybody. Almost everybody on the planet can benefit from it, particularly if you're over 40, but it's really weak. So if you have some mild night sweats, right, or a little bit of sleep difficulty, but really mild, this might be enough. And it's completely safe. The next formula, Da Bu Yin Wan, is for severe night sweats, severe hot, boy, I put that That's kind of a mess there. And severe hot flashes, So as you can see, they're really severe because I said it twice. So this is a kind of a classic go-to it formula. Then our Xian Tong is for overall hormonal deficiency. Xu, X-U means deficiency. And it works quite differently. It works by affecting the pituitary gland. So it goes directly to the part of the brain that is controlling the underlying hormone levels. And it has a whole range of very powerful activities in working with the pituitary and with your hormones. Then we have a formula called Huan Shao Dawn. This is a little more for kidney yin and kidney yang deficiency. So it will help with night sweats. It'll help with hot flashes, but it will also bring more energy and more libido or sex drive back to the patient. And then there's one of my favorites, Qinghao Bie Jia Tang, which is for nighttime heat with morning cold. And so this is a question I always ask at some point while I'm talking to a menopausal patient, because I'm really excited. It's like, do you get really cold in the morning? If they say yes, it's like, aha, Qinghao Bie Jia Tang. So we don't use this a lot, but when it's right, it's really right. Okay. Nighttime heat, you get night sweats, hot flashes, you know, you get up, change your clothes, and in the morning you're freezing to death. So these are just some basics so that you know there is something available for you out there. I want to talk now about osteoporosis risk. So here you see a normal bone matrix, and there you see a bone with osteoporosis. So the white is the bone, and the reddish is basically empty space. So osteoporosis, the bone gets holes in it. The bone is a miraculous crystalline structure. It is so strong and truly a phenomenally strong for the weight. Bones tend to be very, very light. That's how why birds can fly, right? Their bones are so light. But we don't want the bones to get too light and too thin, because then they break easily. This is a compression fracture. So you can get many different types of fractures. But in this one, the bone has become so weak that this middle vertebrae has actually crunched down on itself. It'd be like if you took an empty Coca-Cola can and pressed it into itself, and it would compress. And then you get this type of compression fracture. Unfortunately, we get this aging and loss of spinal integrity. And so this, if you have this posture when you're 55, you better start doing some work. I'm talking to myself here, so that you don't end up with this at 65, that head forward, looking down, barely able to stand up. And this is from the spine losing integrity. And then a lot of patients end up with this, a brace, because their spine actually won't hold them up anymore. And really, it's all about quality of life. You know, I'll ask people, or I'll say to people, you know, you could live to 100, and they go, oh my God, no, I don't want to live to 100. And I say, well, what if you could be healthy and happy and live to 100? Oh yeah, that'd be fine. So again, it's all about quality of life. So as we're looking at things like hormone replacement, well, you have a little bit higher risk, and then you're comparing that to your quality of life. So Western diagnostics, the most common is called a DEXA scan. Okay, it's an X-ray scan that's looking at your bones, taking a comparison, or actually taking an X-ray, and then a tech will look at it and come up with what's called a DEXA score. And you have T scores and Z scores. And it's important to have someone read those that isn't going to try to scare the crap out of you. It's to have someone read it that really understands it, but can go into the reality of it with you. For example, if you're a slender, athletic woman, and you've been that way your whole life, and you come back with a low T score, which is comparing you to a young woman, well, we really don't know if your bones are really thin. We just don't, if they're really damaged, we just know that you have thin bones. Well, maybe you've had those your whole life. Maybe they're actually quite strong, but because you're slender and your bone structure is small, it looks like you're osteoporotic, because this is not a perfect test. And so make sure that you talk to someone that can kind of walk you through this so that you don't jump off the bridge. And by the way, there are many, many ways to reverse osteoporosis. Now, don't tell your doctor I said that, because they just don't believe that. But one of my favorite people, it's a young woman who's now 97, who was one of my son's best friend. My son's 20. But when my wife was in school, they would hang out together. He would go to her house and they would make up games together. And she was a foodie, so they'd go out to eat. But I met her because she came to my clinic and she showed me her DEXA score. And she said, "What should I do?" So I kind of went through some things and she looked at me and she literally shook her finger in my face. And she said, "Young man, I don't think you understand. I want to get rid of this condition. I want to be complete, have great bones and not be considered to have osteoporosis." And I said, "Wow, okay." And I pulled out everything for her, bone broth. She started doing bone broth daily that she made herself. We gave her calcium, we gave her vitamin D, gave her vitamin K. I had her start doing Tai Chi and yoga, because Tai Chi and yoga are each the best exercise for certain parts of the body. Tai Chi is overwhelmingly the best for the hips. Qigong, anything where you're carrying the weight in the hips and thighs is great for hip mass in the hip bones. But it doesn't do anything for the spine, because you're always holding the spine erect. So for that, yoga tends to be much better. But yoga is only good for the wrists if you're doing a lot of, you know, postures where you're supporting yourself by your hands and your wrists. But the combination is great. So she did all of it. Still in her 90s, she's doing Tai Chi all the time. She does yoga. She changed her diet, added all the supplements, did the bone broth. And what she did was great. She would make the bone broth and then put it in ice cube trays. And she would use the ice cubes like bouillon. Right? Pull a couple out a day, put them in warm water, and have her bone broth and her collagen. 2 years later, she went back to the same doctor. He looked at her DEXA score and said, "Oh, this has got to be a mistake. I need you to go back and get checked again." She did, came back, same result, no longer had osteoporosis. Now, this is a woman who at that time was in her 60s, and she completely reversed it. And she did not do estrogen. If she'd done estrogen, she might have even got better results with the bone, but she didn't want to do that, which was great. So if any doctor or anybody else tells you that your osteoporosis is not reversible unless you do drugs, forget it. There's only one drug that actually reverses osteoporosis. All of the others, which are 95% at least of the prescriptions, do nothing to actually prevent osteoporosis. They hide osteoporosis, okay? But naturally, there's a ton of stuff that you can do. Okay, you can do surgery, you can do injection into the compression fractures, pharmaceuticals, you can do mostly bisphosphonates, or parathyroid drugs, the most common of which is Forteo. And I didn't put here, you can do estrogen. For the compression fractures, I haven't seen anything that really works other than the injections. And it's like, you know, they stick a hypodermic needle in and they fill it with cement and it pumps the vertebrae back up. And so sometimes that's necessary. The bisphosphonates have a very interesting method of action, which I'll go into in a minute, but I really dislike them. The parathyroid drugs are great. They actually will fix your osteoporosis in a non-dangerous and actually beneficial way. Unfortunately, most of the insurance companies will not cover Forteo or the other parathyroid drugs because the bisphosphonates cost pennies to prescribe. So they will not put you into the really good drug. I have several patients who've been prescribed bisphosphonates. I had them do a little research on parathyroid drugs, and they decide to pay out of the pocket for those drugs. And the two I can think of right now, the two most recent, neither of them is diagnosed with osteoporosis at this time. Okay, so these are some of the guilty parties: Fosamax, which you all know of, Actonel, Reclast, Atelvia, Boniva. These are all different forms of the dendrinate drugs. They all have very long half-life in the body. So even if you stop taking them, they are still affecting your body for many, many years, often about 7 years half-life. And they have horrible side effects potentially. There was a Dr. Jennifer Gunter, I think, but don't quote me. She wrote a book on osteoporosis and prevention. And she was a medical doctor in New York, and she had several older patients come in and say, "Hey, doc, you know, I was standing up, my hip broke, and I fell down." And she'd say, "Oh, no, honey, what have you? Just don't remember correctly. You fell down and broke your hip." And then, "Well, I don't think so, doc." Well, she was riding on the subway, holding on to one of the overhead metal holders that you hold to stand up. The train lurched to a stop, fractured the femur, the upper bone in her leg, and she fell to the ground. From that point on, she was a believer and did a ton of study on these drugs and really looked at what worked and didn't work. And so it's a great book. And unfortunately, I don't remember the name right now. The Menopause Manifesto is the name of it. And what's her name?
Jen Gunter.
Yeah. Very interesting book. And she goes into a lot of detail about this. So bisphosphonates, these are the most common prescription therapy for osteoporosis. Adverse events, esophageal irritation. That means it rots away your esophagus. Irritation or erosion, right? Hypocalcemia, you get very low calcium and bone pain. Contraindications, esophageal problems, renal dysfunction, which is kidney problems, et cetera. Warnings. Now, they didn't put this under adverse events. It's kind of fascinating. Osteochronosis of the jaw. Osteo is bone. Necrosis is death. So this is bone death of the jaw. There are some dentists that refuse to do any bone work, any deep work on the teeth in patients who are taking bisphosphonates because they feel it's too dangerous. This is a picture of someone's jaw who is literally, the jaw has died from doing bisphosphonates. It's an ugly thing. And there are a ton of lawsuits over these things. They've done tons of problems. So I like this one. So wait a minute, I risk jaw death and cancer, but my bones might be strengthened. Well, yeah, when the drug works, yeah. Right? This is a pretty accurate little cartoon. So again, here's a picture of a hip. These are the locations where you can get common hip fractures. If you've been on bisphosphonates, and one of the things that Jen points out is after several years, usually 7 is the number that I see used, you actually get an increase in fractures down here in the femur. Because the bone gets very weak. And so what happens is with bone, you have two primary groups of cells. You have osteoclasts. Those are constantly breaking down old bone. And you have osteoblasts, which are building new bone. Okay. So it's kind of like if you've ever watched them painting the Bay Bridge or the Golden Gate Bridge or anything, one crew goes along with sandblasters and blasts off the old paint. Then another group comes along behind him and puts on new paint, because any idiot knows that if you put the new paint on over the old paint, they're both going to fall off. Same thing happens with bone. So you need the osteoclasts to break down the old bone and recycle it. You need the osteoblasts to build new bone. Building new bone and put it down. Well, the problem is And I remember I said that it was really hiding the problem, the bisphosphonates were. What bisphosphonates do is they stop the work of the osteoclasts. So you're still producing some new bone. And again, it's a matter, are you replacing it faster than it's being taken away, right, with osteoporosis? And so with bisphosphonates, they stop the action of the osteoclasts. And so they stop the breakdown of the bone. And you still get a little activity from the osteoblasts that are building new bone. So the problem is you're now putting new bone over old bone that's very weak because it loses its crystalline structure. It's like anybody who's done construction knows, if you pile up a big pile of concrete, it may have a lot of strength if you put something on top of it, but you can take a pickup and run into it and it'll just scatter. It'll just break up that concrete. So what they do is they put stressed rebar in it, and then it's stronger than almost anything. That's what they build bridges out of, is this stressed concrete. And so if you're using bisphosphonates, you're building big piles of very weak bone, which, by the way, look really good on the DEXA. It's like, ooh, all that bone. And then after 7 years, the bone falls apart and you get a fracture. Okay, so not my favorite idea. So these are different types of fractures that you'll see around the hip. All of them are disabling. So important, vitamins and minerals. There are tons of vitamins and minerals that we recommend for osteoporosis. I'm going to give you a list in a minute. There are many herbs that are very effective for osteoporosis. We love acupuncture, and particularly electroacupuncture. Around a weak bone, for example, if we know there's a thin bone, electroacupuncture, where the electricity is run through the tissue, will actually increase blood flow to that area and can increase the bone. Certain types of exercise, I mentioned yoga, tai chi, vibrating plates, or you stand on a plate that vibrates very, very quickly, and that stimulates the body to replace the calcium and to make stronger bones. And then, of course, lifestyle. You know, stress destroys bones, happiness builds bones. That's a nice quote. I like that one. TCM pattern diagnosis, again, it's primarily kidney deficiency, and usually it's all the kidney deficiencies. Yin, which is the substance, yang, which is the energetic component, jing, which is the deep, deep bone marrow type of chemicals, the qi, which is the energetic flow, and they're all weaker with osteoporosis. So you want to hit it with a multiple approach. Herbal formulas, these are pretty similar to what I mentioned for menopause, except there's a formula down here called Osteo 8 that's from a particular company. But there are lots of formulas for bone. Supplements, vitamin D3 with K2-7, 5,000 milligrams generally of D3. Now, some people, that's not good for you. You should actually get tested to make sure there are two different forms of D3. You should get tested for both of them before you use high dose vitamin C for any particular length of time. This is a very safe dosage for moderate length of time. The K2, the early experiments were done with 180 micrograms. Later studies have been done with quite a bit more and show even more effect. I'll typically use 300 to 500 micrograms, closer to 500 in my patients with osteoporosis. Vitamin K2-7 specifically activates something called matrix GLA protein, which pulls any excess calcium out of your tissues. Think heart disease, think hardening of the arteries. So it pulls it out of there, and then it activates other hormones that cause the calcium to be deposited into your bones and teeth. What a magnificent, miraculous vitamin, okay? Very hard to get in your food, unless you're eating a ton of natto or massive amounts of ghee or butter. It's very hard to get enough into your system. Magnesium, eggshell calcium tends to be a very easily absorbed and usable form of calcium. And then strontium, and strontium is like the rebar, right? I mentioned in the bone. So this is what makes it strong, as opposed to just a big pile of calcium. So these are just a few. When I see patients, I'm going to go through, you know, their blood tests, which will tell me a great deal of information about whether or not they need other supplements. They may need some B vitamins, they may need some vitamin C, et cetera. But this is kind of the core for osteoporosis. Lifestyle, Qigong or Tai Chi, weightlifting, walking, vibrating plates, lower stress. The single most important thing on here is lowering your stress, because those stress hormones destroy your bone. And be happy, increase socialization. Okay, now I'm going to talk a little bit about your favorite topic, which is prolapse. Okay, so lots of different types of prolapses, all common in menopause. Women don't talk about this in general. Even with their friends, they often don't talk about it. It is extremely common. I have treated patients for every type of prolapse you're going to see here. So here's a normal, healthy pubic area. Here is a rectocele where the rectum is pressing into this back vaginal wall and is causing discomfort generally, but it will also eventually cause very significant problems. Here again is another picture of a rectocele. So here, the rectum you see should be up here. There should be a nice thick wall between the vagina and the rectum. And here you see that the wall has gotten pretty much disappeared, right, from the pressure there. This is even more common in women who have either strained a lot, been constipated, or I've waited too long to have bowel movements as a habit. Here's a picture of a rectocele. So this is looking into the vagina, and that's the rectum pushing up into the vaginal canal. This is a different type of rectocele. Here we see things actually, the intestines actually dropping down. Okay, here's again another one, a vaginal wall prolapse. So this is pressing into here. Here's a cystocele, which cysto refers to the bladder. And so here, rather than the rectocele from the rear, you're getting a cystocele where the bladder actually falls into the vaginal canal and can actually fall out of the vaginal opening. Here we see it again, basically the same thing. Here you can see a normal bladder. Here you see the bladder's distended and is falling and pressing. Here's a fistula, which can often happen eventually. And so this is an opening between the vagina and the rectum. Not pleasant at all, but that can happen at a later time after some of these other problems. Here's some points I'm not going to go over. You can do a surgical repair, hysterectomy, if it's the uterus that's falling, surgical mesh, they'll often use. For the bladder, you can do medical devices such as a pessary, which actually is inserted vaginally and holds everything in place, or you can do hormone replacements. So TCM, we do herbs, acupuncture, again, lifestyle, specific training and education, and we get very good success. Now, we get very good success if we catch it relatively early. Like any patient that I have in their 40s that's had children, I go into great detail questioning about this, because if they treat it in their 40s, they will likely be okay. So there's one classic base formula. It's called Bujong Ichitong, which pulls up central qi. So for any kind of prolapse, this is the basic formula. And then these are some acupuncture points. You can look them up if you want, but this is very effective. So you can do Kegel exercises, which never work. If you're over 20, probably over 15, and you start doing Kegel exercises, they have very little effect. because the wall, the muscular wall, has already gotten too weakened, usually, particularly if you've had children. These are vaginal cones that can be used. You insert these and inflate them and squeeze them with the muscles. This is another pelvic floor lift. This is a Kegel Master that you insert. It has a dial here that you dial up different pressure settings and then press against it like a Kegel exercise, but it's much more effective because you have something to press against. You can feel it. And, oh, okay. This is a book, Pelvic Organ Prolapse, which is, I think, well-written. This is my favorite low-cost treatment for prolapse, and particularly for incontinence more than prolapse. And so these are two cones. There's a, you would have a piece of string hanging out, nylon, and you would insert it vaginally, and then you use the muscles to move it up and down the vaginal canal. As you get stronger, you'd start with the large one, and then you'd put in a small weight, and you keep going up in weight. I've never had a patient get up to the largest weight on the largest size and still have incontinence. But if you want to get even stronger, you go to the smaller one and do the same thing. It is like, you can see prices all over, but I've seen them as low as $30, and it's really effective. So here it's just, you're moving it up and down with the musculature. For the first 3 weeks, you'll think I'm a lunatic. It seems absolutely impossible. And then you'll call me and thank me. Here's another one. My uterus fell out. I really just like the title of that one. I've never read the book. Okay. So your stop share. Okay. So I'm back. I want to thank you. That was a quick hit on each of these specific areas. If one of them is extremely interesting to you, for example, osteoporosis or prolapse, hot flashes, night sweats, et cetera, and you'd like me to go into more detail, just send us an email and I'll be happy to take a look at that. Okay. And as I mentioned before, send us questions about anything. I'll be happy to try to work those in on different podcasts. And please tell your friends. You know, we were off the air for a while. We are now back on every Thursday, well, almost every Thursday at 3 o'clock. I'll be here for half an hour to an hour. They are then recorded and you can replay them, but please join us. Now, next week, I am going to start the show with some scary stuff on what happens when you have high stress with menopause. And one of the reasons, as I mentioned earlier, that menopause is so severe in the United States is there are three basic ways that women produce estrogen, okay? One, the ovaries. When the ovaries get worn out and tired, they stop producing estrogen. The second source of estrogen are the adrenal glands. The adrenal glands will produce all of your sex hormones. They just do it in very, very tiny amounts. But if you're going into menopause and the adrenal glands are really healthy, then you maybe, you know, have a minimal problem with menopause. But in the United States, by menopause, almost every woman in our culture has weak adrenals to the point that they're not going to produce estrogen for you. They can't even do their basic jobs. And what'll happen is then they'll resort to the third source of estrogen, which is body fat. It takes 20 to 30 pounds of body fat to produce enough estrogen to keep women from going into estrogen shock. So if you're having trouble losing weight at or after menopause, the first thing you have to address is stress. You can eat nothing. You can eat 500 calories a day, exercise like a fiend, and not lose an ounce because of the stress. Okay. And so I'm going to talk about that in a little more depth because it's relevant whether you're menopausal or not. It's relevant to all human beings and particularly to women. And I'm going to talk about catecholamines and sudden death. Okay. So I look forward to having you back next week. I would love some questions. Again, it helps direct me, and I love working from questions. And for now, I want to wish you a very, very happy new year and a very happy year of the rabbit, and I'm a rabbit, so it's going to be a really good year for me. And I invite you to share that good year with me. So until next week, be happy, be healthy. Bye-bye.